It's Wednesday, the 30th of March, 2016. Happy birthday to no one. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Trevans 1188. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Trevans 1188 and sponsor the podcast for a day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor. So thank you to Trevans 1188 and everyone who has done that this season. Of course, Moneyball.com.au has been with us all season, so thanks to those guys at Moneyball, Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. So make sure you're checking out all the action over on Moneyball. Also going to have a new sponsor come on board, which is going to be an additional way for you guys to help support the podcast. They'll probably be starting from tomorrow's show. And not only is it a way for you to support the podcast, but I think you'll enjoy some of the offerings that those guys have. So we'll talk about them on tomorrow's show. Right now, you know that you can find this podcast. You can listen to it because you're already listening to it, but you can watch it live as it goes to air on YouTube. Admittedly, it is in the middle of the night over in the States, but you guys in Europe, in Australia, and you people with insomnia in the United States can watch the show. And if you are watching along live on YouTube, which, is there anyone doing that at the moment? Yes, there are people tuned in already watching on YouTube live. If you want to interact with the show while it's going ahead, tweet at me at redrock_bball. You can see my Twitter handle under my face on the screen there, and you can interact with the show and ask some questions. We've got a fair bit to talk about. We're going to be talking about the action from Tuesday, of course. We're going to be previewing the action for Wednesday and going to do an update on the Red Rock Listener Leagues over the next 3 days, talk about the championship matchup and how that's going. We've got four leagues to go through today. Also want to have a bit of a discussion about the news that came out about Giannis Antetokounmpo today, which we'll get to in a sec. But before we do, we can't start the show without an introduction from the Red Rock ambassador, Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Thank you, Michael. Before we get into the standard way we start the show with the monstrous line of the night, let's look at the Red Rock Listener Leagues. And first of all, the Red Rock Salary Cap League wrapped up on the weekend, and Dave Hopkins was victorious there over Mark Roberts. So congratulations for Dave for winning that league. He was up in the top two for most of the season. And if you guys don't know what the Red Rock Salary Cap League is, it's a league where you have each team had a salary cap of 70 million, and we use real player salaries. So you saw plenty of guys on the waiver wire for much of the season. Mallow, I don't think, got owned at all. Marcus Sol was sitting around. LaMarcus Aldridge wasn't owned for big chunks of the season because salary cap mattered. And we are going to be doing an expanded version of the Red Rock salary cap next season. We're probably going to expand that out to a 30-team salary cap league where we're going to be looking at, obviously, real player salaries, real NBA salary cap, and doing it that way. So that'll be an interesting league, which all the details will be released about in the offseason. So congratulations to Dave for winning that. As for the standard head-to-head 12-team Red Rock listener leagues, let's go through four of them and see where they're positioned in the championship round. The first one, the Stacey Augman division, which was the one that myself and Matt Smith were both in. Unfortunately, we both missed the playoffs in that league. The championship matchup is Sheldon Crisp, and he is currently leading 7-1 over Joe Buck. So Sheldon looking like he could be taking out the Stacey Augman division. And remember, if you win the Listener League, you get a spot in next year's Champions League. So Sheldon looking like he could be back into the Champions League for next year. In the Clarence Weatherspoon division, Lisa Jacobson is 6-2 up over Alex Newbra. So Lisa hoping to get her spot into the Champions League for next year. So Lisa looking good at the moment. In the LaFonso Ellis division, Darren Church is 7-1 up over Rod Nixon. So Darren looking the goods at the moment as well. And the fourth league we're going to be looking at the moment, there's 12 of these listener leagues. We're going to look at four today, four tomorrow, four Friday. The Cedric Ceballos League, Joey Mamone of hashtag basketball, you'd probably know him. He is 5-3 up over James Gibson in the championship round there. So Sheldon, Lisa, Darren, and Joey all looking to book themselves into the Champions League next year, where you'll face off against the other winners of the leagues, and myself and Matt will be in that league. So that'll be a 14-team Champions League next season. So good luck to everyone. Sheldon, Joe, Lisa, Alex, Darren, Rod, Joey, and James for the rest of this week. Now, the next thing before we get into the lines of the night, some news came out about Giannis Antetokounmpo from Jason Kidd, who said that next season Giannis is going to be the point guard on this team. He will be our primary ball handler, and Jason said, call him whatever, point guard, point forward, point center, but he is going to be our primary ball handler. Obviously, that Brandon Knight for Michael Carter-Williams trade did not work out well, and it appears they've given up on Carter-Williams despite him still being on his rookie contract. He's dealing with hip problems, obviously. He will have a role there, but the other guys obviously aren't good. Tyler Ennis, Jared Bayless, OJ Mayo played some point guard, and Giannis running the point has been pretty good, and he's looked impressive, and he's been bloody scary. What this is doing is it's putting out a lot of information, not a lot of information, a lot of opinions. Whoa, Giannis is going to be awesome for fantasy next year. And you know what? He probably will be. It's hard to say that he won't be awesome for fantasy next year. But I always like to put a little bit of caution forward because, look, Giannis has been pretty good. But since the All-Star break, he is the 48th ranked player in fantasy. In the last month, though, he's in the top 15. That's fine. But my caution comes because what is the concern with the Bucks and Michael Carter-Williams? He's a point guard who is a great defensive guy. He gets a lot of steals. He blocks shots at an accelerated rate for a point guard. He's a decent passer. He rebounds the ball well, but he can't shoot. He can't hit threes, and he can't hit his free throws. How would you describe Giannis Antetokounmpo? I'd say he's a freak athlete. He rebounds the ball well. He's passing very well. He's great defensively, great blocks, great steals. I would also say that he can't shoot. He can't hit threes, and he's a poor free throw shooter. And before anyone gets on me here, I am not saying that Giannis Antetokounmpo is Michael Carter-Williams. Giannis Antetokounmpo is streets and streets and streets and streets and streets ahead of Michael Carter-Williams. But the problem that the Bucks seem to have when Carter-Williams came across is their point guard couldn't shoot. Giannis can't shoot. He can't hit threes. Since the All-Star break, he's hit 1 3. He's attempted 20. He's hit 1. That is not a good conversion rate. Yeah, he's dishing a lot of assists, and his field goal percentage belies the fact that he's not a good shooter. He's shooting 50% since the All-Star break. Again, pretty good, isn't it? It seems good. But on his jump shots this year, Giannis is shooting 28%. It's terrible. It's really bad. And he's shooting 57% on his layups. That's fine. Finishing at the rim, he's at 69%. Great. From 3 to 10 feet, 35. 10 to 16, 29. 16 to the three-point line, 37. Three-pointers, 19. These are not good percentages. They're not good whatsoever. I'm going to bring up what Michael Carter-Williams' shooting is out in those areas. And again, this is not to say that Giannis is Michael Carter-Williams or that Carter-Williams is a better option. But I don't know. There is a concern. Now, Carter-Williams, between 3 to 10 feet, is shooting 46%. 10 to 16, he's shooting 35%. 16 feet to the three-point line, he's shooting 38%. From 3, he's shooting 27%. So overall, shooting better than Giannis. 38% on his jump shots. This is better. It's a lot better. Now, Giannis obviously can drive to the rim a lot more effectively. He can finish at the rim a lot more effectively. He is clearly the better player, but is it going to work running him as a point guard full-time for this team? It depends on who else they put out there with him. Obviously, of course, they could, in the point guard spot, they put another shooter out there and have a shooter at the one, a shooter at the two, and they run Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton out there and another shooter, but then they can have Giannis, Jabari Parker, and whoever plays center as not being able to shoot. And Parker's not a good shooter. He's an in-close finisher. He can't hit threes. All these things might develop, and Giannis might develop these things, but he does have issues. He's not an awesome free throw shooter. He's had a really bad stretch of free throw shooting in the last month or so, and he doesn't hit threes. For the season, he has hit a total of 17 three-pointers, and as I mentioned, in the last month, since the All-Star break, he's hit 1. These are not good numbers, and this is not to put any scare into Giannis owners or anything like that, and he will be most likely a 12 to 15 player next year. That's sort of where he'll get drafted, I would imagine. But the numbers that Carter Williams puts up weren't ridiculously dissimilar to what Giannis does, and especially where their strengths and weaknesses lies. Maybe that's what I'm more getting at. The per 36 numbers for Carter Williams this season, he averaged, 6.1 assists. Giannis, since the All-Star break, is averaging 7.1 assists. The steals numbers, Carter Williams gets a lot more steals. Giannis gets a lot more blocks. He's a better rebounder. But there is some sort of comparison to be made there. It's not a like-for-like or anything like that, but interesting to see how they run it as a primary ball handler for someone who can't shoot and someone who can't hit threes. It's going to depend on who they put around him. Carter Williams obviously can't be one of those guys. Jared Bayless is not going to be the answer. Griffiths Vasquez isn't going to be the answer. OJ Mayo is not going to be the answer. Maybe they put Rashad Vaughn into a bigger role. It depends what they do in free agency. It depends what... Well, they could get lucky and get a Jamal Murray or something in the draft, and that would work out brilliantly for them, I think. But adding Giannis as a full-time point guard does have its risks, and it's going to have some fantasy risks associated with it too. Yes, you can get threes later on, and I've said this plenty of times, is I'll draft DeMar DeRozan because I don't care that he's a shooting guard and he doesn't hit threes. I'll get it somewhere else, and that's definitely the case. But if some people might go overboard and go, I'm picking Giannis in the top 7, I'm picking him in the top 8, and I'd go, you know what, maybe just pull back a little bit. Top 15, yes. Top 20, absolutely. I think that's where he's going to sit. But yeah, I think we just sort of need to calm a little bit. And you know what? Even over the last couple of weeks, he's slowed. He's outside the top 20. Yeah, 15 points, 6 rebounds, less than 6 assists, a steal, 1.8 blocks. He's slowed. It's still really good numbers. And I don't think he's going to play 37 minutes a game next year as well, which is what he's been doing recently. And that's inflated his numbers somewhat as well. So I'd always like to put out an alternate, not theory, perspective. Maybe that's the best way of putting it. Putting out an alternate perspective on just look at some of the things that might be a concern and adjust from there. But obviously we'll do more of this when we get into the preseason and see how all the teams look and when we're going to project all this stuff. But to me, when it was said today, I went, well, that's a bit weird because Carter Williams doesn't work because he can't shoot, and Giannis can't shoot either. And Giannis is actually a worse shooter than what Carter Williams is. Yes, he finishes miles, miles better, but he's a worse shooter. And that's just what I wanted to bring up. I want to know your thoughts on it. I'm sure everyone will think that maybe I'm being wrong or maybe you misinterpreted me. I do not think that Michael Carter Williams is a better player than Giannis Antetokounmpo. There's no doubt in my mind that Antetokounmpo is the better player. Absolutely. No doubt whatsoever. But the weaknesses are similar, and that's potentially a it's not a concern. But and let's see how Giannis finishes this season off, because it has dropped the last couple of weeks. He's dropped off a little bit as well. So let's just see how it all rolls over the next couple of weeks and see what happens throughout the off season. But just I thought it was interesting to bring up that sort of comparison and I get you thinking a bit. So I want to know your thoughts on it as well. Let's now get into the monstrous line of the night. And, of course, it is Stephen Curry of the Golden State Warriors who played 35 minutes, had 26 points, but he hit 6 triples, had 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 5 steals, hit both his free throws and went 9 of 20 from the line. The Warriors win again. I don't know what else to really... I don't even know what to say about Steph at the moment. He's just ridiculous. That's it. He's carrying fantasy teams all over the place. He's doing sensational things. The Warriors are pushing for 73. He might miss a game down the stretch, but he's not going to be missing like we saw today with the amount of guys going out. And I might have a rant on that as well a bit later as well. But he's looks like he's going to be relatively rest-proof the rest of the season. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Cody Zeller. And I did talk Cody Zeller yesterday in the DFS sections, thinking if you're looking for a cheap power forward, he could be the guy, and he turned out to be the guy. He had 18 points in 26 minutes. He had 11 rebounds and 2 blocks on 7 of 8 shooting, and continues to clearly be the center option in Charlotte. And he's putting up pretty nice numbers. He's a top 100 player over the last 2 weeks. And it's only on 9 and 7. But 1.5 blocks, he gives you 66% from the field. He's a 79% free throw shooter. He doesn't turn the ball over at all. So you're looking for that really big field goal percentage, a solid free throw, nice rebounds, nice blocks. Zeller's that guy. He's definitely nothing spectacular, and he's definitely not a must-own guy. But when we're looking at this point of the year, when we're just looking to really fill in specific categories, Zeller's minutes are going to be there, the opportunity is going to be there, and he's going to produce to a degree. And I do really like him as a player and think he can develop into something. And it's been somewhat of a breakout for him this season, which is great because I've sort of been waiting for it for quite a while. But it looks like it's finally sort of coming that way now with Cody Zeller. The young gun of the night, Nikola Mirotic of the Chicago Bulls. He played 37 minutes and he went bananas, 28 and 10 with 7 triples, 2 assists and 1 steal. Who knows what's going to happen with this guy? And I do blame Hoiberg a lot for it because I think that he has criminally misused Mirotic this season. He has not allowed him to get into any sort of rhythm. And we saw it especially earlier in the season. Mirotic would miss 3 shots, ass on the bench, and he'd sit there for the rest of the first half. Hits his first 3 shots. Yeah, let's play 27 minutes and put up big numbers. And despite what you may think has been a dreadful season from Mirotic, he's still ranked 110th. It's not a complete write-off. He's still averaging almost 2 triples a game. In fact, over the last month, he's averaging 2.5 threes a game in 24 minutes. He still is a guy who can approach a block and a steal a game. He's a 5.5 rebound guy on the season. Yes, his field goal percentage, which has struggled, and especially early on, when he's at 39% for the year. But the last month, he's at 42. So that's risen up. 86 free throw. It's awesome from the free throw line. 42 from 3. The shooting has definitely improved from Mirotic, but he's just not getting used correctly by Hoiberg. And Matt Smith had a brilliant stat today on Mirotic. In the 11 games, and only 11 times, in the 11 times that Nikola Mirotic has played at least 30 minutes this season, he averages 21.2 points, 6.7 rebounds, 1.2 steals, 1.2 blocks, and 4 triples. Now, those numbers are top 20 if he was allowed to play 30. Now, in some of the games where he was shit and they played him 30, he wouldn't have done that and that average would come down. So that's a little bit misleading, but it's also that this guy is going to play minutes and he's going to produce and he does it most of the time. The problem is that he doesn't get a chance a lot of the time to play the minutes. And we hear the talk about, oh, his defense is bad. It's not that bad. His defense is actually decent. It is not bad. He's not a poor defender like so many other guys out there. And as I've mentioned plenty of times, that the court goes both ways. And if you actually have a listen to the Nate Duncan Dunked On podcast with Seth Partner, which came out today, and they're talking about if you want a good offensive player or a good defensive player, and they're definitely on my side with that. And they said, an offensive player is double the worth of a defensive player. Every time you want the better offensive player. But I think a lot of players and a lot of people, a lot of teams, were like, you don't play defense to a crazy high level, you can't stay on the court. Even if their offensive game is out of control and it's impossible to stop. And Mirotic, it's not impossible to stop, but his offensive game can be good. And he's not a bad defender. He is a pretty good defender. He's not Doug McDermott. And McDermott's not even really that bad anyway. He's not a horrific defender. He's not Enes Kanter, but then Enes Kanter's offense is so good, I probably should keep him on the court longer also. But the court goes both ways, and offense is more important than defense. And that's the way that I see it anyway. But Mirotic, it has been a disappointing season. Mirotic induced, Hoiberg induced, Bulls induced. It's all been to blame. But he is capable of these gems. Obviously, the Bulls have still got 3 more games left this week, and you're going to hope that Hoiberg can give him at least close to 28 minutes a night moving forward, especially with Taj Gibson dealing with that rib issue. Fingers crossed. It's very likely not to happen, though. They could just run Bob Portis out there, Bairstow, Felizio, and limit Mirotic. And Mirotic, the 2 games before this, had played like 16 and 18 minutes, and the game before that had gone for 35 with 9 triples. It's confusing. It's very confusing the way they use him. And it continues to be confusing. The dud of the night. Brooke Lopez played 15 minutes. He had 5 points, 3 rebounds, and an assist. he just got sat down after halftime. The Nets were getting smashed. They were getting crunched by the Magic. They ended up losing by about 40. And he just got his ass sat on the bench. And Bojan Bogdanović also got a chance to sit down. Tony Brown, is it Tony Brown or Tony Smith? No, it's Tony Brown, isn't it? I always forget that. He got an opportunity to see some other guys out there with Thad Young resting as well. I don't know why he's resting, but with Thad resting, Lopez just sat down. There is absolutely no way you could have known this was going to happen. There is no way of predicting this or working against it. It just happens. And this will take me into my next rant event. It's not a rant. I like the word rant. Discussion. Soliloquy about players resting and schedules. First of all, I think that the best thing you can do in your fantasy league is obviously have this week at the very latest be the last week of your season. Yeah, some of mine finished last week, and I think that's pretty good. This one is fine. Normally, it's all right. It's been a bit worse this year. You have to finish the season here. Yeah, I think we all guarantee that. I think we all agree that that's where you have to finish the season, is right here. The next thing, two-week playoffs are pretty much mandatory, and they do account for allow you to account for resting to a degree and overcome injuries, and it's a bit fairer. The next thing you need to do, or you should do, or I really like doing, is games limits. Because you have a games limit, you have someone injured. Yes, you lose elite production from, say, a Brook Lopez here KD who rested today, but it doesn't put you at a games played disadvantage. Because throughout a two-week matchup, we in the league that we play in, we have a 76 game played limit. You'll easily play that amount with the guys on your team. So someone misses, like I've had Victor Oladipo that's missed a couple of games in my finals matchup. I don't have to drop him because he's injured, because I know that over the course of those 2 weeks, I'll probably have to sit four or five guys or four or five man games on the bench anyway. Someone's injured, well, he just becomes one of those guys. Yeah, if you have four guys injured, then yes, you have to deal with it. But having a games limit allows you to actually... you put it on a somewhat even playing field, not like, oh my God, I had two guys injured and he missed four games and my opponent had already a better schedule, so they ended up playing 11 more games or something over 2 weeks. That kills you. But having a games limit forces everyone to come more on a close playing field, and I think it works out really well. Obviously that, you have the weekly additions cap is another way of doing it, bringing a season earlier up. These are all things you can try and do to reduce the impact of resting and the impact of injuries. To a degree. The next thing it also brings me to is drafting for schedule. The Bulls, the Nets, they got five games in the championship round. I'm drafting them. Hey, that's cool. Brook Lopez played 15 minutes today. Thad Young didn't play at all. Jimmy Butler's not himself. Taj Gibson's injured. Derrick Rose got hurt today. Joakim Noah's out for the season. Jarrett Jack's out for the season. Where else do you want me to go? And yes, it would be worse if they had a three-game week, but making decisions based on a schedule 5 months down the track, it's probably not going to work out. It's probably not going to work out because so many things can happen. I like his playoff schedule. He's going to go 4-4-4 until he rests two games and goes 4-2-4. And you might use it as a small factor in drafting. And if two guys are exactly equal and exactly going to give you the same stats, and maybe you take that guy because in the chin. And I think it only really applies in the first four rounds anyway, maybe five rounds. After that, it's pointless. I still think it's pretty pointless anyway, but after the first five rounds, it's completely pointless. Even if you're looking at it that way, look, you don't know what's going to happen. Trades, your team trades. It's if you're picking an inferior guy because he's got a better playoff schedule, I think you're doing it completely wrong. And we're seeing so much this year of just, there's just randomness and it's just stuff that happens and injuries and rests and poor performance and mid-game benchings that you can't account for. Just my two cents. I feel like I'm opinionated today. I don't know why. Let's get on to the perfect DFS lineup from Tuesday's games. At point guard, Lord Alfred Payton, 38 points. He's been pretty significant at the moment and been pretty hot. He was in a really good spot here, and I did like him, and he put up the big numbers. With LeBron out, Kyrie was always in a pretty decent opportunity. Now, the problem that I thought he might have is going up against Pat Bev, but that didn't stop Irving here, who went for 44.4 points, a big night from Irving. Shooting guards, Courtney Lee, 29.7 against the Sixers. It's always an opportunity. And Jim Harden, just always finding his way onto the perfect DFS lineup, 44.2 for Jim. The small forwards, Nick Batum, 50.4, Sixers, great. And Mirotić at 41. He's always a tournament punt option, and that's literally it, given the way that he's playing. With Thad Young out, Thomas Robinson, who hadn't played the previous two or three games, went into the starting lineup and played big minutes. The common sense of that does not sit well with me. It doesn't make sense. This guy wasn't good enough to play at all, and the guy playing all the backup minutes, like Chris McCullough, surely you'd want to give him an extended run rather than the guy who's been just not good enough to get on the court. Let's play him 40 minutes. Robinson was always going to get more run here, but I would have liked to have seen give McCullough a bigger run. Anyway, Tom Robb went for 36.4. Draymond had 51.7. And Jan Mahinmi, another big game, 30.9 points for Mahinmi, and the total of that is 366.7. Let's have a quick break for a word from SeatGeek, today's presenting sponsor. Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated, and they all try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to try SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. It is the best place to go to look for tickets for any game or concert or any sporting event, anything. Broadway show, musical, whatever. Go to SeatGeek, look for your tickets, get that app onto your phone. I have it on my phone. I'm always looking at things that I can go and see when I'm heading across to the States later on this year. SeatGeek has taken all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. They have a big green big green highlights around them, big green dots that tell you it's a good deal. Before you buy, you can also use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. Best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Unlike StubHub, they show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to trick you with huge fees on the checkout page. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, enter the promo code REDROCK, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code REDROCK today. It's great if you can help the podcast out and get yourself $20 and cheaper tickets as well by using that promo code REDROCK. SeatGeek is, you would have heard it all over the place now, and I do really appreciate you guys who have used my promo code to show that you have come from the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast and that you do like what we do over here. So thank you to everyone who has done that so far this season. And if you haven't done it yet, download that app. It takes 5 seconds. Enter the promo code. It's free, and you might even get yourself a bargain on there as well. All right, we are going to get straight into these games now and have a look at them in a little bit of extra detail. There were six of them. Let's get stuck straight in now. You can see that on the screen if you're watching along live. The first one is the Brooklyn Nets and the Orlando Magic. Shane Larkin, another 33 minutes. I'm glad that he's locked in as a starter. 10-4-3 with two steals. Again, not spectacular, but two steals is nice. The three assists is all right. He's going to provide value. Tom Robb played 32 minutes, 18-12, had a steal and a block. He'll go back to irrelevancy after this. Big field goal percentage, 8-13, 2-7 from the line is not ideal, but that's the price you pay for him. Chris McCullough kept that 16-minute role, had 5 points and then a lot of ones. 1-3, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 1 steal, and 1 block. And really, the rest of the box score is pretty ugly because the game was incredibly ugly. Sean Kilpatrick still got his 11 points and added 2 steals in 23 minutes. Don Sloan played 7 minutes. Bojan Bogdanovic played 15. There was no Thad Young, and there was no Rondae Hollis-Jefferson as well. So that's another one. Oh, let's stash Hollis-Jefferson for the 5-game playoff week. And I already gave you my thoughts on why I thought that was a bad idea. And then he rests the game, and it would have been a horrible idea, especially if you're in a weekly lock situation. Overall, there's not much to really glean from looking at this box score. Yeah, guys that hadn't played previously jumped back into the rotation. Wayne Ellington, Robinson, and Willie Reed, guys that hadn't played at all recently, and they put up some nice numbers, but there's nothing really actionable for fantasy leagues from there. On to the Magic, Aaron Gordon with a free throw line in-game dunk. Don't see that very often. He had 20 points on 9 of 11 shooting, so that's a massive boost for your field goals. Only the 4 boards, but added a steal and a 3, so a nice game from him. No Nick Vucevic, but he will likely return for the next game. So the Magic started Dwayne Dedman. He went 15-4 with 3 blocks. He's been good the last 2 games, but there's no long-term value there. And Jason Smith off the bench was also solid, 14-5 with a block in his 21 minutes. Lord Alfred Payton only played 26 minutes, but went 11-5-12. He had 2 steals. He actually hit all 3 of his free throws. Rather miraculous for him. He went 4 of 11 from the field, so that's not great. But we know what he can do. Rebounds, assists, steals, that's what he's going to bring to you. Vic Oladipo returned from his wrist injury, and he might as well have not have, to be honest. But overall, it's still not a terrible line. 7 points, 1 3, but 3 rebounds, 8 assists, and 3 steals. Just good to have him back. Andy Nicholson, 21 minutes for Nico. 24 points on 9 of 9 shooting. 3 threes, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. I probably don't need to explain that Nicholson won't shoot 9 of 9 every night. I know that he's Skiles' boyfriend, but once Vucevic comes back, he is going to lose some minutes. Dedman's going to probably move out of the rotation. Smith will have minutes reduced. So Nicholson is just a deep league guy. Maybe if you hope the next game that that Vucevic doesn't play and you can get some more at Nicholson. But even then, he still remains more of a deeper league player. The Magic play again on Thursday. So if we find that if Vucevic isn't playing, then you might look at Dedman. Then you might look at Nicholson as a stream in on that Thursday. Brandon Jennings went 11-2-6 in his 16 minutes, and Mario Hezonja played 25 and went 10-3-3. 2 steals and a block, a good night, but this was a blowout, so Skiles didn't play anyone 30 minutes, and that's totally understandable. Fournier had 15 points with 3 triples and 3 assists, and that's been Skiles' MO all season. Blowouts either way, we're spreading the rotation, and that's fine. And you got no problem, you can't, no argument with any of that stuff. It's when he does the bullshit stuff in tight games, plays crusty veterans in place of guys who he should be developing. But in a situation like this, absolutely no problem with the way that he handled that rotation, which is not something I imagine you would have heard come from me in regard to Scott Skiles this season. The Chicago Bulls and the Indiana Pacers, the Bulls keeping themselves in playoff contention. Jim Butler played 36 minutes and he was poor again, 14-4-3, 2 steals. He was 6 of 10 from the field, so at least he shot well, but he's just not right. I can't put my finger on it. He just is not himself. And there's a lot of troubling things coming out about Jim Butler in Chicago. Now, I don't remember where I heard it. It may have been on the CBS Iron Basketball podcast talking about the tension that Butler's bringing and the relationship between him and Rose and the blame being on Jim instead of Derek and the players more behind Derek and the organization more behind Derek and not necessarily behind Jim and him being changed with the contract and the money and the attitude. And to be honest, he's been not ideal. The last 2 months, he's been ranked outside the top 60. And that's the Jimmy Butler that we saw before last season, that guy who was ranked around 60th. He's dropped outside the top 20 for this season. I think in the preseason rankings, I had him ranked at 29. So I was a little bit down on him, but he hasn't been good. And the knee injury has taken a fair bit out of him recently. And he's going to have knee surgery. There's a lot of worrying things about Butler at the moment. And interesting to see how it all plays out in the offseason, but it's not ideal. Pau Gasol, 33 minutes, almost a triple-double, 10-11-7. He had 4 blocks as well, but not a good shooting night, but still some nice counting stats. Bob Portis, who did start that second half for Taj, only played 10 minutes. He had 9 points. He had 1 rebound, 3 of 3 from the field. I don't think that Portis is a must-own 12-team league. Yes, there are 3 games left, so you might want to look at him, but he's more of a 14-16 team league guy if Taj happens to miss time. Now, Derrick Rose had only 8 points on 4 of 15 shooting. He had 4 assists with that elbow problem. Let's again wait and see before we before we hear any or if he's going to miss any time, I would imagine that Rose will miss one of these next three games due to this elbow problem. And you can cue the vagina jokes about Derek Rose. The guy's been pretty good this year. He knows what he has to do to look after his body, unlike what Jimmy Butler's doing currently. And that's for his own benefit, and it's for the team's benefit. And I've got absolutely no problem if he has to miss a game because his arm's not right. Etuan Moore was back, despite yesterday them saying, oh, we'll probably look to get him back on the weekend. He miraculously recovered and played 24 minutes, 5-4 with a steal and a block. He would get the biggest bump, I think, if Rose had to miss time. Obviously, Aaron Brooks would too, but Moore is the preferred backup at the 1 and 2 for the Bulls over Brooks. Dougie McDermott struggling at the moment, 6 points in 16 minutes, and he really was only a points option anyway. And Cristiano Felicio went 8-5 in his 7 minutes. On to the Pacers. Paulie George, 29-5, 4 steals, 1 block, 2 triples, big game. Play the Bulls, that's what happens. Same with Jan Mahinmi. Amazingly, a big man against the Bulls puts up big numbers. 29 minutes for Mahinmi, 18-7, 2 blocks on 9 of 12 shooting, a huge 9, and he has been red hot lately, and he should be owned in way more than 39% of leagues. Miles Turner, you couldn't ask for better back-to-back games if you're a big man. The Rockets and the Bulls, and Turner destroyed your hopes in both of them. Now, he dealt with really, really severe foul trouble here. He had 5 fouls in 16 minutes, enabling him to just have 6-5 with a block, so not the greatest night from Turner. He is not necessarily a must-own or must-hold player at this point, especially we're in championship round most likely. You might need to just get someone in who's going to play. Monte Ellis, 8-5-4 with 3 steals and a block, subpar. And Georgie Hill, not a good night from him either, 6-3-4 in 32 minutes. The rest of the minutes and the rest of the production was spread pretty thinly across the rest of the guys. CJ Miles can't get minutes, 12 minutes for him, 7 points with a 3 and a block, and that's pretty much going to be the way that it stays. We also saw Solomon Hill get 27 minutes out of nowhere, and he does nothing from a fantasy point of view. He was 0 of 6 for 4 points with 3 rebounds. The Charlotte Hornets and the Philadelphia 76ers. Nick Batum, a triple-double, 19-12-12 with a 3 and a steal. People dropped him in January. Courtney Lee played 37 minutes, 15-6-3. He had 2 threes, he had 2 steals, he had 1 block. That is superb. Courtney Lee is just not that guy. And you know what? He has been better lately, though, so I'll give him some due. I'll give him some kudos. And he's been a top 100 guy over the last 2 weeks. He's doing it on the back of really nice field goal percentage, and that's what he does bring. Great free throw percentage. Again, that's what he brings. Nice steal numbers, 1.5 steals, 1.5 threes. In low scoring, half a block, just doing it in those areas. So you're looking for someone who gives you some threes and some steals without hurting your percentages. Lee is not going to be a horrible ad. His upside is limited, but he can do those things. Kemba, 16-5-2 with 4 triples and 2 steals. A 5 of 19 shooting night is not ideal, while Al Jefferson went 7 of 9. Sorry, he didn't go 7 of 9. He went 7 and 9, and he had a steal and 2 blocks in 21 minutes, and that is really what his limit is at this point. Marv Williams did not benefit from the Sixers matchup, 8 and 9 in 31 minutes. And not much else. Jeremy Lin was out of this one, so Jeremy Lamb played 20 minutes and went 7-7-4, and Jorge Gutierrez actually played 12 minutes as the backup point guard. On the Sixers, there was no Jeremy Grant, there was no Nerlens Noel, there was no Rishon Holmes, so Bob Cove moved back into the starting lineup, and he was on fire, 18-7-2, 6 triples and 3 steals, 6 of 16 from the field. He's had an up-and-down season, but he's coming back pretty strong at the moment. And Ish Smith, another huge minutes game for Ish, 41 minutes, 15-3-6, 3 threes and 3 blocks, not good shooting, 6 of 17, but some pretty nice numbers. And with those guys out, Grant, Noel, and Holmes, Hollis Thompson remained starting and was solid as well. 8 and 10, 2 triples, a steal and a block, but he was even worse shooting the ball. Only 2 of 11. He is not a real 12-team league guy to me. Another 3 threes from Isaiah Cannon. You want threes, you add Cannon. That's pretty much how it works. Carl Landry had 8 and 3 in his 22 minutes. Elton Brand went 7 and 9 in his 19 minutes. And Christian Wood had 2 points in his 7 minutes. It's going to be Landry. It's going to be Brand. It's going to be Wood who take a lot of these big man minutes. Bob Cove played the 4 today as the Sixers went pretty small. And they're probably going to have to do that if Noel and Grant happen to miss more time. Grant should be dropped. He's not worth holding through the injury. Noel, at this point, you probably have to drop him. It looks like he's not going to be returning until the weekend. You might have to drop him. You don't have to, but you might have to, depending on how your team is set up and how the matchup's looking this week. But he's not going to return until the weekend, it looks like, at this point. But that could also be pushed back. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Detroit Pistons. No Serge Ibaka, no Kevin Durant for the Thunder as they were resting. So you were all expecting a huge Russell Westbrook game. We didn't get it. He went 24, 4, and 6. He had two threes. He had a steal. He shot 8 of 28. And that could be absolutely crippling to your team field goal percentage. So not a good night from Russ. We would have hoped a big night, but it just didn't come through. Enes Kanter was big. 14 and 14 in his 25 minutes, efficient as usual, going 6 of 8, while Steve Adams played 35 and went 7 and 5, but the gem there is 3 steals and 3 blocks for Adams. And I've talked about Adams a bit lately. He's a great back-end 12-team punt free throw center and continues to be that guy. With Durant and Ibaka out, Kyle Singler started. He went 6 of 4 in 18 minutes, and Deion Waiters had, after a couple of good games, actually, a stinker, 4 and 5 with 2 assists and 2 steals. But that's where he's been providing value, is getting you steals. And I don't think you really associate Deion Waiters with steals, but he's been getting them in pretty significant bunches lately. Cam Payton played 13 minutes, didn't do much. Randy Foy, 9, 5, and 3 with a couple of blocks in 23 minutes. And Josh Huestis played 16 minutes. He had 5 points, he hit a three, he had a block. Really would like to see him get extended run in at least one game, but this is extended run for him, I guess. I don't think he's got much future as an NBA player, but hey, he wasn't terrible in this one. For the Pistons, a big win for them. Marcus Morris, 24 and 7, a block and a three in 38 minutes. Andre Drummond, 13 and 15 with 2 steals and 2 blocks, and Toby Harris went 17, 7 and 3. So big names, numbers from their big names. Reggie Jackson was also okay, a triple one, 13 points and 6 assists, while Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, He struggled 3 of 16 from the field. Still 8, 7, and 6 with a steal is not horrific, but that shooting is not ideal. He's still got 38 minutes. Van Gundy's not going to bench him when he doesn't have things going, unlike some other coaches out there. And the bench not providing much as per usual. Steve Blake went scoreless in 20 minutes, and Stan Johnson went 7 and 3 in his 18 minutes. Speaking of rest, we go to the next game, which was the Houston Rockets and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Rockets with the big, big comeback win over the Cavs. Jim Harden, 44 minutes, 27, 6, and 8 with a steal and 3 threes, doing it all for fantasy owners at the moment. And Pat Bev, a bounce-back game from him, 10, 7, and 6, 2 threes, 2 steals, 1 block. He's fine for 12-team leagues, but by no means is he a must-own guy. Clint Capela's a guy you've got to consider. And it might seem stupid for a guy who's continually playing less than 20 minutes, but another 17 minutes here, 9 and 10, 2 steals and a block. Capela is getting, over these last 4 games, 8 rebounds, 1.3 steals, 1 block, 63% shooting. It's good in limited minutes. You're punting free throws because he's shooting 38% from the line, and the last week he's had 4 attempts, and that hurts. But you ignore that fact. 8 rebounds, 1.3 steals, 1 block, 63% from the field. Don't tell me your team couldn't use that, because I'm sure it could. And he's going to be available in lots of spots. Not the strongest ad, not a must ad, nothing like that, but he's getting it done in significantly small playing time. They play again on Thursday against the Bulls. So the big man stats are going to be through the roof in this one. And if you're looking for those stats, Capela should be on your radar. They only have, they've got 2 more games this week, Thursday and Sunday, but he should be on your radar for Thursday. You don't write him off. Mike Beasley, 17 and 8 with a block in 27 minutes, so his minutes are back up. They are a bit yo-yo-y, but it's 2 strong games in a row from Beasley, so you do have to look at adding him if you're looking for scoring. Donatas Motiejunas only played 10 minutes, 6 points, and Dwight Howard was 11 and 11 in 31 minutes. He had 2 blocks. He also went 7 of 22 from the free throw line. So a big negative there, but you shouldn't care if you own Dwight Howard, because you know that that is going to be the case. Trevor Ariza went 15 and 6 with 2 threes and 3 assists, a pretty decent game from him. On the Cavs, Kyrie, 31, 2 and 8, 5 triples, 1 steal, 1 block, big night there. And Kevin Love, I would have hoped for more from him in a game without LeBron, 13 and 11 with 2 triples, not his best performance. Well, Iman Shumpert did play, he got the start, he played 35 minutes and turned in a pretty nice line, 11, 3 and 2 with 2 threes, a steal and 2 blocks. When LeBron's back, he'll go back to a 23-minute role, 24-minute role, and he won't be worth looking at. J.R. Smith was terrible, 4 points in 35 minutes, and Tim Mozgov was pretty bad as well. Now, he'd played 20-plus minutes for about 4 or 5 straight. didn't hear, played 9 and went 2 of 5 and got 5 fouls in those 9 minutes. And some of that is the way they handled Howard. So the fouls racked up pretty quickly for the big men. Mo Williams got another 6 minutes. He seems to be somewhat back in the rotation, but that's not going to really interest us from a fantasy point of view. And Tristan Thompson with 39 minutes here, 16 and 10 with a steal and a block. This does not mean I'm running to go and add Tristan Thompson. The last game of the night was the Washington Wizards and the Golden State Warriors. Otto Porter 11 and 6 with 2 steals and 2 blocks, a nice performance. And Markieff Morris back in action, 24 minutes, 15 and 8 with 3 threes and a block. I'll say it again, he's not playing big minutes, but he's producing enough that he should be looked at. And I've been on him for big chunks of this season since the start of the year. And they've got another game Wednesday against Sacramento, which is enticing. They play the Suns on Friday, so some really good matchups, albeit on busy day, so he might not fit, but you know, tasty matchups. And then they play again on Sunday. So 3 more games for the Wizards, so Markieff should be under consideration. Johnny Wall scored only 8 points, but did have 5 rebounds, 11 assists, 1 steal, and 4 blocks. Missed both his free throws. Just a really, really odd line for John Wall. Bradley Beal, 17, 2, and 4 in 31 minutes. That's okay, but he's just, I don't know, he's just something to me. I can't put my finger on what Brad Beal is. Underwhelming, maybe. Marcin Gortat played 26 minutes, went 9 and 10. Not his greatest night. You would have hoped he played more, but when you play the Warriors, centers do get marginalized to a degree. The bench for the Wizards, Dudley, Hickson, Oubre, Temple, Sessions, Thornton, Hilario. Nene's the guy if Markieff had to miss time, but no one else there has any real interest or appeal to me, really, in most formats. For the Warriors, Draymond almost a triple-double, 15, 16, and 9. 3 threes, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. A big night from him. He was perilously close to the monstrous line of the night. Well, Harry Barnes actually had a decent night, 14 and 9 with 2 assists and a steal. Does not mean that I'm going to add him. And Clay had 16 and 4 with a couple of threes, a steal, and a block. So big games from their big names. And as per usual with the Warriors, the bench not doing a massive amount. 8 and 4 for Livingston. Mo Spates went 7 and 2 in 10 minutes. Barbosa 6, 3 and 3 in 22 minutes. Nothing really to write home about there. That is those games all wrapped up in a neat little package. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to preview Wednesday's action in the NBA. I saw ya. We have got 9 games to look at from a DFS point of view, and with some seasonal league stuff chucked in there whenever I feel it's appropriate for Wednesday. So let's get stuck into those now. The first one is the Atlanta Hawks and the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 2, and the total here is 200 points. Kyle Lowry, who's been dealing with that elbow issue, had it drained the other night. He says he's going to play, so that's obviously good, but he has been really bad the last couple of games, and I think a lot of that is shoulder related because he hasn't been able to shoot, and that's what's going to happen. Let's hope that he doesn't fall apart down the stretch, as happened last year, and the Raptors are bundled out of the playoffs. Let's hope that they can go far and push the Cavs and make the playoffs fun. At point guard in this game, I don't really like anyone. Kyle Lowry is at 8,200, but he's not really giving anywhere close to that recently. Just a 27 average across the last three. The Hawks' defense has been really good lately. The Raptors' defense against point guards has been solid also for most of the season. So, look, you might throw Dennis Schroeder in at 4,300 into a tournament. He has had a 39-point game across the last five, but really, he's going to need minutes to put up big numbers, and that's a risky proposition. Now, Jeffy Teague at 6,600. Nice game in the last one. 48. It was against the Bulls, though. 36 average across his last three. 33 across his last five. But I would prefer that at 6,000, not at 6,600. So I reckon you can pass on all the point guards going around in this one. And Corey Joseph, forget about it. He barely touches 15 points most nights. Shooting guards. Kyle Korver's at 3,700. He had 25 in the last game. He has not been playing well this season. It is not a bad matchup for him, but in his last three games against the Raptors, he's dropped 14 points on average. That is not good. He is not someone I'm interested in. DeMar DeRozan's salary has dropped to 3,800, and he hasn't really approached that 40-point area, zone, whatever you want to call it, recently. Probably not the time to do it against the... Or it'd be the time to do it. Probably not the opposition to do it against, given how well the Hawks have defended as a whole over the last month or so. I think they've got the best or second-best defense over the last couple of months. DeRozan, not a great option here, I don't think. But he's less than 8,000, I'm more interested. Terrence Ross, that thumb injury. If he is out, we've got to look at Normie Powell. He's at 3,900. He dropped 27 in the last game. He's averaging 24 across his last three. If Ross is out at 3,900, Powell becomes a very good GPP option. And it happened in the last game, and I expect him to go for 20+. And if he goes for 20+, then that's you've made your money back. So I think that he's in play there. Tim Hardaway's salary's dropped by 300, back down to minimum because he is averaging less than 7 points a game across his last three. I wouldn't say he's back to being horrible, but he's back to being a non-DFS entity. Small forward, Damari Carroll. Hopefully you weren't stashing Damari Carroll. If you were stashing Damari Carroll and didn't have an IR spot, you're not this far into the season anyway. He's not going to play most likely for the rest of the regular season. This knee injury is clearly more severe. I was going to say more severe than what they let on, but I don't want to misquote. I think it was Ryan Wolstadt that when the injury happened, he said this is a long-term injury. He is not back in 6 weeks. He is not back post-All-Star. It will be March, April at the earliest before he's back. And everyone else seemed to doubt him, but Ryan obviously bang on. And that's why I was suggesting we don't need Carroll to be owned in most spots. He was piss poor before the injury, to be honest. He wasn't good. He was barely inside the top 100 for a lot of the time there. And you obviously need to move on. And even if he's in IR, put someone else in IR. Move on. There's no point holding him. He's not playing. Thabo at 4,000. He's just, it's a good matchup. And the salary's dropped. But he's just, I can't put any trust in it. Kent Bazemore at 42. I'd say the same thing about him. And obviously, Mike Scott, Jim Johnson, and Bruno Caboclo are not intriguing DFS plays. The power forwards here, Paulie Millsap is at 8,200. It is a bad, bad matchup, and it's been a bad matchup all season for power forwards going up against the Raptors. Yeah, Millsap's copped it. His three games against the Raptors, last three, he's averaging 27 points. His last five actual games, 39 points. It's a big drop-off. He was huge in the last... He's averaging 47 points across the last three games. That's huge. But... In the Raptors at 8,200, are they going to keep him under 40? I would think that is a definite possibility. So he's not someone that I'm interested in. Luis Scola at 3,700. He is a punt option, but I'm much happier punting on Patrick Patterson at the moment, who's at 3,900. And you can get 22, 25 points out of him, but it's still not a great option. The centers, Al Horford versus Jonas Valanciunas, the main matchup here. If you look at Horford, he's at 7,100. He is that 33 to 34 point guy, which is okay. It's not spectacular. He hasn't been great against Toronto recently, so he's probably a fade. Well, Jonas Valanciunas, you play 30 plus minutes, he's going to smash 6,000 value. But will he play it? That's the concern, and I would have to say no. So I don't think that he's really all that interesting. Obviously, Bismack Biyombo in a bench role is not going to be worth 5,200 either. The interesting thing with Valanciunas, though, in the last three games, he is averaging 33 points. but my trust level in Dwayne Casey is pretty minimal. The Phoenix Suns and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are favored by 6.5. The total is 211.5. That sounded all really, I said that really awkwardly. General Grievous Vasquez is back in practice, but he unlikely to play in this one, but he's back in practice. The point guards. Jared Bayless is at 4,100, not really giving us anything at the moment to go on with. But you know what? He's had a couple of those big three-point games and you know, played 30 minutes or so and hit 18 points with 5 assists and 4 steals. So he can get it done, and it's a really nice matchup. So he's a tournament play and probably someone who'll be pretty lowly owned. Tyler Ennis dropped 32 in the last game at 3,800. You almost have to consider using him as well in a tournament because you get 32 points out of 3,800 and you're well on your way to setting up a pretty nice lineup. But your trust level in it's got to be minimal. Brandon Knight on the other side had 37 in the last game. He's averaging 38 in the last three games. He's playing his former team. He's back at his former home court. Do you think you want to show Jason Kidd something? It could lead to a 4 of 40 shooting night, and that's not ideal. But at 7,200, for him to get 35 points, I feel like he is definitely in a spot to do it. And I don't like him in cash, but I do like him in a tournament setting. I really like him in a tournament setting. Ron Price at 3,700 put up a big game in the last one. He put up 26 points, but I'm not really expecting that to happen again. Shooting guards, Devin Booker's the main one we're going to look at here. I think he's at 7,000. Actually, you know what's amazing? Devin Booker's at 7,000 and Chris Middleton's at 6,900. Don't think we would have seen that a while ago. And it's definitely, it's deserved because Booker is averaging 35 points across his last five games. He's had a maximum score of 44 in that time. His lowest score has been just 24. Do you want to use him at that price at 7,000? Well, one thing we know is he's going to play a lot of minutes. And I feel that at a cash game, I think that he is not safe, but I think he's a decent investment. Middleton is up and down. He's at 6,900. He's averaging just 23 across his last three. But if there's ever a team to get someone back into form, this is it, especially when we're talking about a guard. I think he's a great tournament play at 6,900. He's got 45, 50-point upside even. Hasn't shown it of late, but he could be in for a pretty nice performance. Not putting much faith into it, but he could be. Rashard Vaughan, John Jenkins, Archie Goodwin, the other shooting guards here, but they're not worth our time. PJ Tucker is at 4,700. It's just too high for a guy who just doesn't have a big ceiling. Giannis is at 9,200. That's too high for me. You know that ever since he got into that 10,000 range that it was too high. Now his salary has dropped by $700. It's a big drop off. But you know why? He's averaging less than 30 points across his last three. He's down to just 34 across his last five. He hasn't been as good. Nowhere near as good. Now this is obviously, it's a nice matchup. You play the Suns. He could be big, but 9,200 means he needs to go for 45 plus. That is still a pretty high bar to hit. You could look at him in a tournament, but I'm not overly interested in Giannis. Power forward Jabari Parker has also dropped off. He is at 6,100. He had a nice 30-point game in the last one, but had struggled to get there recently and he's been up and down. So he's a tournament play. This is a good boost for him, but he's a tournament option. Mirza Tlidovic at 4,600 has been playing pretty well, but he is hot and cold. Now, the 26 in the last game was good. The 26 average across the last three is solid, but I don't know. I just have a hard time getting too excited about him. 4,300 for John Henson, I'm more excited there. Now, his salary's risen significantly, up by $800. He is averaging 30 points across his last three. Trusting Jason Kidd with John Henson feels like it's a death wish, so I definitely wouldn't be using him in cash, but I think if you're looking for a cheap power forward with 40-point upside, I think that Henson has to be one of your guys that you look at. Alex Len looked good in the last game as well, but at 6,200, it feels like his ceiling is 35 points at the moment, and that's not good enough. I'm not going to be using him. And John Lua back to obscurity with our Tyson Chandler returning. Speaking of Chandler, he played less than 20 minutes in his return. He's at 4,200. I'm not all that interested there, nor with Plumlee. And obviously, Greg Monroe at 5,800 is still too expensive. The Los Angeles Clippers and the Minnesota Timberwolves is the next one. The Clippers are favored by 5.5 points. The total is 212. Paul Pierce is going to be out for the rest of this week, it appears. I don't think you're owning him in majority of leagues, so that's not going to be too much of a concern for you. Let's look at the point guards here. This is a really good point guard matchup. Chrissy Paul, Rick Rubio, 9,400 for Paul. Yeah, don't mind it. It's look, he's giving you a 41 average across his last five. His last three against the Wolves have given you 33 points, which is not super. 9,400. He needs to get to 45 plus 46, 47. I think that he can do it, but I'm not super confident with it. Rick Rubio, on the other hand, 2,000 less than Paul. Over the last three games, Rubio is averaging 39 points. Over the last three games, Chris Paul is averaging 39 points. Now, the defense of Chris Paul is a factor, but Rubio is red hot at the moment. At 2,000 less, for him to get 35 points, I think it should be what he's looking at and what you're expecting from him. His lowest score in his last five has been 31 points. He has been absolutely red hot, and I see no reason why he doesn't continue it to a degree. Austin Rivers, actually been all right. Austin Rivers, 3,600. He's averaging 17 points across the last five, had 24 in this one. If you think it's going to be a blowout, Rivers will get some extended minutes, and he does become someone who can play at the two and the three with Paul Pierce out. Maybe he gets, well, maybe not the three, but it pushes other guys down, pushes Crawford to the three, and that allows Rivers to play some extra minutes, and maybe at 3,600, you could get 22, 23 points out of him. It's not great, but it's an option. I probably wouldn't use it. Shooting guard, JJ Redick at 4,500. Not really giving us much at the moment. The salary's come down. He's always a tournament option, but no cash reliability. Zach LaVine at 5,900 has not been returning value on that whatsoever. Averaging just 22 across his last five. The matchup is not ideal. He's not someone I'm interested in. And Jamal Crawford at 47, not just too high. It's $500 too high. Small forwards, Wigo had a big game in the last one. He's at 6,900. He dropped 48 in the last one. It's a terrible matchup. Wes Johnson, good defender. The Clippers' defense in general is pretty good. 6,900, he needs to get to 35. Now, he's averaging 34 across his last five, so he's sort of there, and I don't hate using him, but with a $300 rise in his salary, plus a matchup against the Clippers, plus a DeAndre Jordan in the paint, probably leave him alone. Jeffy Green, nice matchup, 4,500. Inconsistent as everything, so I don't think that he's definitely not a cash game option. And Wes Johnson at 3,600. He's going to get some extra run with Paul Pierce out. He can go out and have a four-steal, four-block game. He can go out and have a Richie Beno pretty comfortably as well. So at 3,600, 20 points is not stupid for him. So he becomes a cheap option if you're looking to fill in some cheap guys. I think I do like him here. Shabazz Muhammad, Luke Marmute, Nemanja Bjelica, Tayshaun Prince, Damian Rudej. We're obviously not really using them under any circumstance. Power forwards, Gorgui Dieng is at 6,400. Has been good, but not good enough at 6,400. Don't like using him here. And the rest of the power forwards, I don't even want to mention their names. Let's look at center, because this is where I do want to mention some names. Karl Anthony Towns is at 9,000. He dropped 50 in the last game. He is averaging 44 across his last five games. DeAndre Jordan's a good center, but Karl Anthony Towns is brilliant. So I'm all for using Towns at 9,000. 8,500 for Jordan, I don't have a problem with using that. You know, he's been putting up big numbers. He's averaging 39 in his last three against the Timberwolves. He can go for 40 points comfortably. And this is the time to use Jordan, because when Griffin comes back, the rebounding opportunities will dry up and some of the offensive lobs and putback opportunities will also disappear. So not a guy that I'm all that interested in. If you somehow can predict that Jordan will get into foul trouble or get injured, then you know that my boy Cole Aldrich at minimum salary would be great, but you must have some sort of Nostradamical powers to be able to project that Aldrich is going to get over 20 minutes, because he's productive. He's just not DFS productive enough in his 13 or 14 that he gets. The next game, the Denver Nuggets and the Memphis Grizzlies. No spread is released for this one yet. I guess it's because we don't know the status of Zach Randolph and his ankle. I would be leaning towards he doesn't play if I had to guess. Yusuf Nurkic on the Nuggets is ill. He was ill. He will likely be back. Point guard, DJ Augustin was bad in the last game. Emmanuel Mudiay was good, so that limited Augustin's upside. I still think that at 4,900, you can get... Look, he put 9 points up in the last one, Augustin, and his last three games, he's averaging 28, including a 9-point performance. So he's been smashing value most games, but when you throw a 9 in, it really scares some people off. So I imagine his ownership will be low. The matchup's not ideal, pace-wise. Like, obviously, players-wise, there's no one on Memphis who's really bothering you. But he's someone that I would... I would consider. Emmanuel Mudiay at 5,600. He's way more up and down than what Augustin is. Yeah, 5,600 is not an exorbitant salary for him. He's had a 47-point game in his last five, and he's still only averaging 24. So it shows you how up and down he can be. He's a tournament play. Ray McCallum at 3,600. He outplayed Jordan Farmer in the last game. He got 17 points, but at 3,600, I'm not putting much in that. Xavier Munford, no. And Jordan Farmer, still no price on FanDuel just yet. Probably wouldn't use him, but I couldn't even if I wanted to. I couldn't personally because FanDuel blocks me, so that's great. Shooting guards, Will Barton has been good lately. He's at 5,400. I'll give credit where credit's due. He's been good. He's averaging 29 across the last three. It's always a bit of a punt, though, to throw him into a lineup. In a cash game lineup, I couldn't get behind it. In a tournament, fine. Tone Allen's minutes have dropped. His production has dropped. He is a stay away. Lance Stevenson, I'll say the same for him. At 6,200, there is no way that I would use Lance. Now, he could go out for a big one, but he doesn't crack 30 minutes anymore. He's averaging just 20 points across the last three, less than 20 across his last five. At 6,200, you are joking, I think, if you are considering him to be a lock or anything like that. Gaz Harris at 5,000. His minutes have come down just one or two a game, but it's noticeable, and his production has dropped off too. So no thanks for Gaz. Danilo Gallinari will be out for the rest of the regular season, so if you're holding out hope for him coming back, you're probably out of the playoffs anyway. Matt Barnes at 6,200. He's an option, but I feel like 6,200 is almost his ceiling. I know he can go big, but it's very, very rare. It's a great matchup for him, but it's hard to use him. Vince Carter, Jakar Sampson, Mike Miller, Axel Toupin. Nah, don't really think you want to use any of those guys. Power forward, Darrell Arthur at 3,600. With Ken Faried back, you'd probably scrap him. Although he did play 26 minutes in Faried's in his last game. He put up 8 points, so that's not ideal, but yeah, he's an okay guy, but no, probably not. Zach Randolph at 75. I would love it if we knew Randolph was going to play at 7,500. He's averaging 42 across his last three, but we need to wait on word of that. If Randolph is out, Jermichael Green gets a bit of a bump, but at 5,800, that feels like it's bang on his ceiling anyway, so I'm not all that interested. Ken Faried at 58, I'm not interested in either. And Jarrell Martin and Ryan Hollins will pick up the scraps in the minutes. At center, if Zebo is out, the Birdman might get some extra run. He's averaging 25 minutes across his last three and getting 19 points. And at 3,700, that's fine if you're wanting to lock in a cheap center. If Zebo plays, don't imagine he's going to be worth it. Nurkic at 4,500. He's averaging 28 across his last three. He's got an illness issue, clearly, but he's a guy who averages in his last five, is averaging over a fantasy point per minute. And he could get 25 to 26 minutes. Now, we don't know the impact of Faried being back on Nurkic. Does that push him down to 17 minutes, 18 minutes? That makes him a risk. He's an okay tournament punt, but it's just a little bit too uncertain for me. Nikola Jokic, as much as I still love him, he's not really a great DFS option. The New York Knicks and the Dallas Mavericks. There's a fair bit of value in this one because of the way that Dallas is running their rotation. Let's start, though, with the point guards. Let's start by telling you the Mavericks are favored by 5, and the total is 201 points. The point guards, Darren Williams, probably not going to play. It's the reports that I read, his status is uncertain. He's not probable. He's not questionable. He's uncertain. They don't know what's wrong with him. They've sent him back to Dallas for tests. I would be staggered if Williams plays in this one. So let's look at Ray Felton. Let's look at JJ Barea. Now, they've had massive salary rises. Barea's gone up by 1,000. Felton's gone up by 900. But it doesn't rule them out of being used. 5,000 for Barea. He had 39 in the last game. He's averaging 30 across his last three. If he's going to start or come off the bench and play 30 minutes, he's fine to use. Ray Felton, if he's going to get 32 minutes at 5,000, I'm okay with using him. 29 points across his last three. Now, he's probably a step behind Barea to me, but both guys can be considered. Jose Calderon is at 4,400, and that salary's risen a little bit too, but he's been exceeding value pretty comfortably. He's averaging 27 across his last three because he's being overused, but he is being overused, and we need to accept that, and we need to consider him. It feels pretty dirty to use him, but I think you have to consider him. If he's going to get minutes and put up 27 or 28 points, he has to be in consideration. He's not at the top of my list by any stretch, though. So shooting guards, Aaron Aflalo. No. Devin Harris, though, 3,900. He's got a great matchup going up against Vucic and Aflalo. He's averaging 25 across his last three. He had 28 in the last game with Williams. Again, if Williams is in, then Barea, Felton, Harris aren't guys who are going to be really worth considering. But at minimum salary, or basically minimum salary for Devin Harris, 25 points, it means a lot. It's over 6x value. It's approaching 7x value. And that's tremendous. Aflalo, Galloway, no. Wes Matthews, he's at 4,900. So he's not exorbitantly priced. He's averaging 28 across his last five. It's a positive matchup. I do think that you can look at Wes Matthews and use him. I'm fine with using him. Small forwards. Justin Anderson has scored in double digits in his last three games. He dropped 25 in the last one. He's an averaging 21 across his last three. These are FanDuel points in just 23 minutes. He started the last game. He's at 3,700. He's playing the Knicks. Tournament. Fine. Throw him in. Mallow. On the flip side, Mallow gets to take on Justin Anderson. He's at 8,600, Mallow. He's averaging 39 across the last three. You would think that 40 points... Mallow's averaging 38 in his last three against the Mavericks. 40 points should be locked in for him. I'm fine with using Mallow. Lance Thomas probably out for the rest of the season as well with his knee problem. Power forwards.
Percentages.
Yep. 6,900. He's back. He's getting minutes. And that's all it really needed for him was to get the minutes. He's averaging 35 across the last five, 36 across the last three. His lowest score in his last five is 27. He dropped 40 in the last game. His recent games against Dallas, he had 36 points. Fine. I think Kristaps is a great option here. Dwight Powell had 30 points in a start for the Mavericks at center. Now, Rick Carlisle, he started Salah Mejri and said, are we going to run with Mejri? And he did for two games and then benched him. Dwight Powell, we're going to run with Powell down the stretch. It's been one game. Let's get another one out of him. We want to hear that he's starting first. And we want to hear, Dwight Powell starting at 4,100, taking on the Knicks. I like what Powell can do. I think that at 4,100, he is a really, really good cheap power forward as well. I like him. Derek Williams, no. Dirk at 7,800, the production's just dropped a bit, and that salary is pretty high. So once he gets a drop, it's not worth it. David Lee played 4 minutes in the last game, had 2 points. I think we can leave him alone. Let's look at the centers. Rob Lopez is going to be taking on Dwight Powell. He might be taking on Zaza Pachulia. He might be taking on Dirk Nowitzki. He might be taking on Salah Mejri. He might be taking on JaVale McGee. He's at 5,800. I think he's a pretty decent bet to exceed 5,800 worth of value. A 30-point night is not out of the question for Lopez. Mejri, he didn't even play the last game. Pachulia's minutes have been up. He's at 3,600. I don't trust it at all. I'd consider it, but I don't trust it. And McGee went back to being a non-entity after that surprise performance the other night against the Kings. The Pelicans and the Spurs. The Pelicans. Didn't touch on this before. Drew Holiday out for the season. Alonzo G out for the season. Ryan Anderson, sports hernia. Not officially out for the season, but out for the season. Norris Cole, still day-to-day with his back problems. Who knows when we're seeing him. Anderson can be cut. Holiday, obviously, G wasn't owned, and Cole can be cut if he was still owned. But we're looking at DFS value at the moment. So we're not going to have Cole for this one, most likely. We're not having Anderson, we're not having Holiday, we're not having G, not having Gordon, Evans, Davis. I'll just keep going down the list. So Timmy Frazier at 4,000. I think that he is in play. Tone Douglas would be, but he's at 5,700. That's a bloody lot for Tony Douglas, so I'm not thinking that I'm going to be looking at using him. I think he's an okay play at that, but there's a lot of risk involved in using Tone Douglas. The Spurs, it's a risk to use a lot of the big-name Spurs because they could be 50 up at halftime, it feels like. Paddy Mills at 3,800. I would throw Paddy into a tournament, but I wouldn't feel great about it. Tone Parker, Andre Miller, no. Let's look at the shooting guards. Danny Green is just not providing anything at the moment. Manu at 3,600, probably not. The Pelicans don't have any shooting guards anymore. Not much to really see here. Kawhi Leonard, look, he could tear him apart, but he could also play 26 minutes. So he's not going to be... Look, he's not even back from injury. He's listed as probable, so he's likely to play. But he's not even back yet. He's a no-go. Jordy Hamilton is at 3,600. He looks to get pretty big minutes here, I would imagine. And he looked okay so far. 19 points in the first three games on average. At 3,600, that's only in 21 minutes. You bump that to 30 minutes, maybe he's a 20-point guy. Maybe he's a 24-point guy. I think that he is definitely in play in tournaments, Geordie Hamilton. Luke Babbitt at 4,700. I think you have to look at Luke Babbitt. 28, 30 points, he could get you because he's going to have to play minutes. Someone just left a comment saying, I agree. I have absolutely no idea what you agree about because I don't know what you're referencing that. But if you want to let me know what you're actually agreeing about, maybe I can be thankful that you agree with it. But thank you for agreeing with whichever one of my points that I made when you typed that comment in. Luke Babbitt, yeah, he's not a cash game player because you're playing the Spurs, so shit could go wrong very quickly. But he is a tournament option. Kyle Anderson, who'd been great previously, 34 points in the last game. If Kawhi plays, we're not interested in Kyle Anderson. He's at 4,200, so he would still be in play if Kawhi was out. Power forwards. Dante Cunningham is probably going to play 48 minutes. He probably won't, but he'll play a shitload. He was already playing. He's already averaging 38 minutes across his last three. He's at 3,700. He does nothing with those minutes. Now, he has had a 30-point game in his last three games, in his last five games. But he doesn't do anything. I'm not interested. LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,600. I like the matchup. He's been brilliant lately. And I do think that he's one of the better high-priced power forwards out there. But there is a risk. So you'll see when I put up the DFS picks of the day, he's in there as the high-priced power forward. But it's more for tournaments. I don't think you can really trust him in cash. David West at 3,700. Boris Diaw. Both of these guys are tournament punts in a real sort of, 20th lineup sort of situation. And the centers, I like Alexei Ajinsa here. I put a lot of faith in Ajinsa. I know that he can produce. He's only at 3,900. He's going to have to play minutes. He has to play minutes. And 3,900, 25 points is not out of the question for him. 30 points isn't out of the question. So I do like Ajinsa here. Timmy Duncan at 5,100. Love it if he would play, but we can't put any trust really in his minutes at the moment. But I still think he's a decent guy to look at. Omer Asher, Kendrick Perkins, there really no trust in those guys. The Golden State Warriors and the Utah Jazz. A lot of people have had this game circled as a real danger point for the Warriors. They might get their eighth loss back-to-back in Utah. It could be a problem now. They handled the Wizards relatively comfortably. But this, and look, I think a lot of people talking about it being a danger game, the Warriors will be really focused on it being a danger game. So that might help them, but it's going to be one to watch. Steph is at 10,500. I don't think that he can't handle Utah, but the way that Utah slows the game down, now Warriors can speed the game up, but when Utah gets the game, they'll slow it down. So you're going to lose some possessions out of this game. I don't like Steph here. He's averaging 38 in his last three against Utah, which is not good. They could also smash the Jazz, and the Jazz have been smashed plenty of times this year. So 10,500 is probably not a great option to spend on Curry. I wouldn't have thought. Now, it worked out today, spending it, and I thought it would be. But tomorrow, Wednesday's games, I'm not sure that Steph is going to be a great option. Hull Netto, Trey Burke, Sean Livingston, they're probably not. Oh, Shelvin Mack, sorry. 5,900 for Shelvin Mack. He was okay in the last game, but I'm not wanting to spend almost 6,000 on him. Rod Hood at 5,200. It's a real positive matchup. Shooting guards have been able to put up decent numbers against the Warriors. He was on fire against the Lakers, but prior to that, he'd been pretty poor. 5,200, I don't have any cash game trust in him. Klay at 7,600, probably a little bit expensive against a Utah team whose defense is quite good. Barbosa, Rush, Johnson, Clark, they're not looking at being used. Gordy Haywood at 6,900. Salary's dropped by 100. 6,900, he needs to get to 35 points. Now, if the Jazz are going to win, he is going to go over 35 points. I'm pretty confident, but I'm not confident enough to use him in DFS. Harry Barnes had 29 points today. He's averaging 22.5 over his last three. He's at 4,200. This is not the spot to use Harry Barnes. Power forwards, Draymond, a big game again, a 52-pointer today. He's at 8,500. If it's one of the Warriors guys I'm going to use, it's probably going to be Draymond, but it's probably going to be in a tournament. He's averaging 46 across his last five, but that's awesome, obviously, but there is a little bit of a concern, but I'd be okay with using him. Favors at 7,200. I think that Derek Favors at 7,200 is a pretty decent guy to look at here. I think that he is in play. Booker, Spates, Lyles. Trey Lyles is averaging 23 points across the last three games in a backup role. That's pretty impressive. I don't imagine that he's going to do enough, even at 3,800, for you to really consider. at center. Rudy Gobert at 5,800. Put up a 41 against the Lakers, which is great. At 5,800, the Warriors don't really shut down centers all that much, but they can go small and really limit his playing time. Probably a guy to steer clear of. Bogut at 43, nah, wouldn't be using him. The Washington Wizards and the Sacramento Kings, there is no spread currently released for this one just yet. We're assuming that the Kings are going to get their players back, that they all rested in the last game. For what reason, I don't know. Johnny Wall at 9,700, a perfect matchup for him going up. Now, it's a back-to-back, so that's a concern on the road, but he wasn't good against the Warriors. I reckon he's going to have to come out, he's going to fire up, and he's going to have to put in a big performance. He's at 9,700, and the ease of this one, it looks beautiful. I think that he's a good play here. Rondo is at 7,700. He's still dealing with that toe problem. Not sure I want to use him at 7,700. He's always an okay in-play guy, but not great. 5,600 for Darren Collison. If everyone's back, then he might go back to that 27-minute role, and that's not all that appealing at 5,600. Just had a question come in from Daniel Charles. Do you think Steve Kerr might rest any players? I heard him say something about resting. Yeah, he said at some point someone might miss some time and have a mental rest day. I don't think it's going to be in this one. I don't think that they're going to be resting in this one against the Jazz. Back to this Wizards-Sacramento game at shooting guard. Brad Beal at 5,700. That's not a big salary, and that just keeps me bringing back to Beal and going, you know what? In a good matchup like this, he has to be considered. I think you don't have to use him, but you have to consider him at 5,700. He can easily go for 30 against the Kings. Seth Curry had 28 in the last game. He's averaging 23 across his last three. He's at 3,900. It depends. If Ballinelli is out, I'm okay with. If we hear that Curry is starting and Ballinelli is out, then I'm fine with using it because Collison will be minimized. Ben McLemore's not going to do anything. James Anderson's terrible. Yeah, Seth would be interesting at 3,900. I'm not falling all over myself to use him, but he's interesting. Allen Anderson is questionable with his ankle, but he's not going to be a real factor in this game. And the rest of the crap at shooting guard at the Wizards, Temple, Thornton, Eddie, they're not worth our time. Small forwards. Otto Porter at 5,500, just giving you consistent cash game value. 27 average across the last three, 27 across the last five. Just nice numbers. I think that he's in a good spot here. This could be a 30-point performance from Porter. Rudy Gay's been terrible at 6,200. You just feel like a big game's coming. I feel like a big game's coming, but it never comes. I will leave him alone, and then he'll invariably put up a big game. His last three against Washington, he's yielded 33 points on average across those games. So he's got history against this team. Omri Caspi had 31 in the last one. Probably don't expect him to do that again. At power forward, Willie Cauley-Stein has been putting up some pretty impressive numbers. Now, he has risen to 5,000. That is a salary rise of 1,100. That's getting serious, FanDuel. He's averaging 35 points, though, across the last three. So at 5,000, that's still 7x value. Now, do you expect him to go for 35 again? I probably don't, but I expect him to go for 28, 29, maybe. I don't know. It's hard to judge what Cauley-Stein's going to do. He's a great tournament play, less of a great tournament play than what he was before. He could also have 20, and our projections aren't loving him in this spot. I probably steer clear. Markeith at 4,900. He's been solid but not spectacular. Probably not someone I want to look at. Although the matchup's beautiful. Nene, no thanks. Quincy Acey, Jared Dudley, JJ Hickson, nah. Let's look at the centers. Boogie should be back in this game. He's at 10,600. What are we going to do with Boogie? He's averaging 48 across his last five. Now, I don't mind spending up on Boogie if you've gone cheap in other areas. Marcin Gortat at 6,600. Centers can have some big numbers. He's averaged 33 across his last three against this team. I think that Gortat is a pretty solid play at 6,600. The last game of the night, the Miami Heat and the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers in a bit of locker room strife with this D'Angelo Russell, Nick Young situation, and apparently the team freezing out D'Angelo Russell and not talking to him. Maybe that's why he was so poor in the last game. Goran Dragic is at 6,900. I would absolutely love if he comes back from illness and plays here, but it's still a risk to use him. But I still think that he is a 35-plus guy in this game. Russell at 55 is not providing any value at that number. He is averaging 16 points across his last five games. Not worth it. Huertas, no. Shooting guard, Kobe is questionable. He reckons he's going to try and play every game, so look, we're not using him at 5,400 anyway. I love Dwayne Wade at 75 here. He dropped 50 in the last game. I'm not expecting a 50 again, but I'm expecting 35-plus, so I think that he is in play here. Jordy Clarkson at 53, not a good spot against the Heat. Joshy Richardson's now at 5,100. That makes him harder to use. Now, he did average 28 across the last three, but it's making it harder to consider Josh Richardson at that salary. Some big jumps in FanDuel. Corley Stein, Richardson, Barea, Felton, $1,000 jumps on all those guys. Justice Winslow at 41 for the small forwards. A great matchup. If there's ever going to be a game that he gets hot and puts up numbers, it's going to be this one, but it's unlikely. In a tournament, I would look at him for a 25-point night maybe. Joe Johnson at 49, still too high for him. He's not really producing at that level. The power forwards, let's look at Julius Randle at 6,400. He is very, very much up and down. This is not a good matchup for him. This is probably a game where I would steer clear of him. Larry Nance is not interesting. Luol Deng at 6,000. It's a great opportunity for him to get to 30 points, and you might look at him in a tournament, but that's probably all. Amari Stoudemire, Brandon Bass, they're not worth it. Centers, Hassan Whiteside. 8,500 for Whiteside. I am all in on Whiteside here. I think we can use him and feel pretty comfortable about it. He's averaging 50 points per 36 minutes across his last five. His last three against the Lakers have yielded 44. He's getting 42 on average in his last five. 45 points. If he drops a 50, you shouldn't be shocked. And the Lakers centers, as per normal, are rubbish. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day. JJ Barea at 5,000, Rick Rubio 74, and Johnny Wall at 97. The shooting guards, Devin Harris, 3,900, Brad Beal, 57, and Dwayne Wade at 75. The small forwards, Wes Johnson, 36, Otto Porter, 55, and Mallow at 86. Power forwards, Johnny Henson, 43. Kristaps. Ooh, I missed the button.
Percentages.
There we go, 6,900, and LaMarcus Aldridge, 8,600. And the centers, Alexia Ginza, 39. Robin Lopez, 58, and Carl Anthony Towns, 9,000. We are done for today's podcast, guys. Don't forget, download that SeatGeek app and use the promo code REDROCK to help support the podcast and get $20 back off your first SeatGeek purchase for tickets to concert events and sporting events. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall and Basketball Monster at BaskMonster. And of course, check out everything across on Basketball Monster with all our tools, projections, forums, everything that's happening over on Basketball Monster. We are done today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.